Hello and welcome to another episode of Terra Nullius Cyprus. I'm Costa Constanti. Thank you to the CVAR Severis Foundation for sponsoring us and to Island Talks, our host channel. And today I have a very good friend, Eleonora Russo. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
I'm actually really happy that you're here because we're also personal friends, but yes. I also admire you as a person and as an artist. Eleonora, for those that don't know, is Cyprus's version of the singing budgie. She has the most marvelous voice I think I've ever heard on the island. Oh. And I'm making her blush. She can't see this, but making her blush.
Oh, my God. I'm paying him.
She's paying me. Yeah, I take cash deposits. No, look, Eleonora Russo, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, really, thank you.
No, my pleasure. And I wanted to basically just start off by saying, yes, that you're an artist, you're a singer, you're a flautist, is that the right word?
Flautist. And pianist. I'm a musician, I would say.
A musician in general, because, yeah, she actually is multi-talented. She can play more than one instrument. So you can play the flute. And the piano. And like I said, for me personally, my soft spot for Eleonora is her singing.
Voice,
now, let's dive straight into the current and then we'll work backwards. Okay. Your latest album, Hara.
Hara, yes.
Which basically means in English?
Joy.
Joy. So her latest CD album is named Hara and you performed it. It was
about a year ago.
It's been a year already, hasn't
it? Yeah, but it really flew.
It certainly flew and it's still in my mind. Just for those that missed out on this incredible evening of music, song and dance. I was dancing, but...
I think people were dancing in the chairs.
People were dancing in the audience, yeah. She performed at the Nicosia Municipal Theatre.
At the Municipal Theatre.
It was a full house and Eleonora gracefully went up on stage and blew our minds. Really, she's insanely humble, but she blew our minds. I mean, I've always known Eleonora and I always knew that she was a good singer and I knew that she was a good musician and an artist in general. But when she started singing on stage, I was floored. I was absolutely floored.
Maybe it was a different energy, you know, because it's the originals and when it's your original work, you have a different kind of connection to the work.
Versus playing covers, for example.
Which is, I mean...
I've heard you play covers and you're excellent, but it was just... I've been in auditoriums with some of the most famous singers on earth, you know, and they've blown me away. Yeah. But I sat there and I thought, how is this person in Cyprus? Mm. You know, like... She should be at the Carnegie Hall. She should be, I don't know, at the John F. Kennedy Center. Sorry, John F. Kennedy Trump Center in New York. You know, like, really, you should be playing on the international stage. And I know that you've lived abroad for a while.
Yes.
You lived in the Netherlands, was it?
I've lived in England and in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. And I have performed at North Sea Jazz Festival.
Wow. Where is that exactly?
It's in Rotterdam.
Rotterdam.
Oh, yeah, and it takes place annually. Every July.
Okay.
And it was like one of the greatest honors of my life to perform there. Yeah. And actually, it's a life dream to perform with Hara there.
We can make this happen.
Yes.
So if anyone in Rotterdam is listening, the North Sea Festival, was it?
Yeah.
North Sea Jazz Festival. Eleonora Russo from Cyprus and her Hara album.
So you can check it out on Bandcamp.com.
Yeah. Say it again.
Bandcamp.
.com. Bandcamp.com. Check it out. Hara, C-H-A-R-A.
It's H-A-R-A.
H-A-R-A.
It's like when they say Sarah with an H, so it's Hara with an H.
Hara with a H. I love it. No, and you can download the album from the site as well. Yes, and I can't highly recommend it enough. You play it in your house. You play it when you have a romantic date at home. I'm telling you, the singing budgie. I mean, the melody, the voice, the sound that comes out of this woman is incredible. She's getting all bashful and shy now. let's down you a little bit here. Like, let's go back. Okay, let's go back in time. So you studied in the Rotterdam?
I firstly studied in Sheffield, and I did classical piano and psychology of music. And then I came to Cyprus for a couple of years, worked here, and then went back again to audition for the Rotterdam Conservatoire. Okay. And I passed in 2007, so I went there 2007, and I graduated in 2012. I've been in Cyprus in the last 13 to 14 years, and trying to evolve and grow in an island that is really difficult to do.
A bit restricted. I mean, we're surrounded by water to begin with, but we're also small.
I considered it an achievement to be able to evolve and grow in your own country. Mm-hmm. In this diverse environment, and to be acknowledged by your peers in this country, because I think it's always been a bit more difficult here.
Well, we are our own worst critics, right?
But in the Netherlands or in England, I had it was easier. Yeah. I don't know how it sounds. It's an oxymoron.
No, it makes sense. I think people are more receptive and willing to hear something different or something unfamiliar. But in Cyprus, we tend to be
more open-minded.
Yeah, we tend to be more pop culture here. We want to hear the mainstream.
Yeah, but it's. I think it really boils down to our sense of identity and how willing we are to acknowledge the person next to us. It's easier to acknowledge a person that.
I want to pull out that comment you said about our identity.
Yeah.
Like, we have Mansour Doumani, for example, who are super successful locally and internationally. Yeah. But again, they're playing with Cypriot music, Cypriot prose, Cypriot sounds, okay? And they do an amazing job, and they're really great ambassadors for our music industry. Yeah. Then you have people like Michalis Terlikas, who is a classic, you know, or the late Belaia, who's, you know, again, a classic singing traditional songs, which are very popular and people love. But again, doesn't so much resonate on the international stage per se. But again, it's the familiar.
Yeah.
So for as Cypriots, we know that sound. But Eleonora Rusum is not singing just in Greek. You're singing in English, I think. And you could be performing anywhere in the world. It doesn't necessarily have to be in Cyprus.
Yes.
You're not singing Cypriot for the Cypriots.
I know what you mean. I think identity is a number of things.
Mm-hmm.
And our sense of identity, and actually the level to which we know ourselves allows us to accept others.
Yep.
And I will insist that it's easier to acknowledge someone who lives abroad.
Yes.
And I think we have this distorted notion that we need to make a career abroad. And then when we come back to Cyprus, we will be acknowledged already because we have been acknowledged abroad.
I just want to shout out to Anavisi, Michalis Hatiyannis. they had to go to Greece to make it big, you know? It's market science, though. I mean, like being such a small place, as super successful as you could possibly be in Cyprus, you're only reaching out to 600,000 Greek Cypriots, or 1.2 million people on the island overall. You know,
which is fine.
Of course, it's fine. But you're bigger than Cyprus, and I say this with all my love.
Thank you.
Okay, like I love what you do in Cyprus. You blow us away. You perform at various festivals and concerts and events, and I've seen you at a few of them. I mean, you were in Lefkada some months ago.
That was
I can't remember the name of the festival, but
In Lefkada it was just a day festival.
Day festival
of Lefkada, but I think maybe you meant Katidata at the Windcraft.
So yes, Katidata Windcraft.
A very big moment in my career because I performed with three amazing musicians from Berklee College of Music.
That's right.
And that was like a huge stress, but at the same time, a huge excitement about it.
You know, the thing I'll let listeners know about Eleonora is that she pretends to stress and pretends to be all frazzled. And then as you can hear her chuckling away now, she's a bubbly personality. I don't ever receive any stress from Eleonora, even though she uses the stressful words in her messages. She's so cool. She's a cool cucumber. But look, in Katidata, actually, side note, if anyone wants to listen to a previous podcast I did with Ellie Michael, who was the head of Windcraft. What she has done in Katidata, bringing this village, as they would say in English, this one horse town, okay? Mm-hmm. And makes it the center of the world in Cyprus for that weekend in August. In August or July?
It's late July.
Yeah,
usually it's mid-July to late July.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, hot and humid. And hundreds of people come from all over Cyprus and the world, especially around Europe. They come into Katidata and perform you know, jazz, live music, you know, guitar. I mean, it's incredible. And
also a very nice aspect of that festival is that there's a jam session after that.
Yeah.
So all the participating musicians jam together.
Yep.
And actually, that's something that we really miss from abroad.
Yes. The bonding and networking and the growing and developing together.
Yeah. And also Ellie's vision. And I think all the people who have managed to create music festivals or other types of festivals as well, dance festivals, theater festivals, they have a vision. And that's what we need here. We need a vision.
You're right. It impresses me actually for such a small island. Mm. How many of these festivals we have? I don't want to use the word indie festivals, but we have so many. Like, we have the Animation Festival, we have the Xaxis Festival, we have the, you know, there's festivals all over the island. And then on top of this, which is like the high arts, let's say, and the or alternative or particular interest, like animation or whatever. But then you have every village across this island has a festival, like the Zivania Festival, the Orange Festival, the Watermelon Festival. And it's like our island is desperately trying to socialize and have fun.
Mm.
Because, okay, we're not on the international stage. We're not bringing in all the big singers and the big performers and the big circus acts like Cirque du Soleil and all these, okay? So we take it into our own hands.
Yes.
And we are a very social nation. I mean, we are insanely social, you know? And this is something I miss whenever I leave Cyprus, because, I mean, like in the northern, western, more western world, let's say, you know, socializing is reserved for Friday and Saturday night.
Oh, no, we do that every day.
Yeah, I mean, like,
we do that every day.
Monday night is a Friday night in Cyprus. You know, like the TGIF, thank God it's Friday, is every day in Cyprus, you know. And then that plays out into our festivals. I do wish, though, that we were more, how do I put this, with the artists across the island, that we were more supportive of them. not
more
just
appreciative
to be
and supportive. I think it begins with appreciation.
Yes.
And when you do appreciate, it's because you feel the lack of.
Yeah.
So when I feel the lack of, I appreciate what's around me, and I say, oh my God, this artist is amazing.
Yeah.
We should create an environment for them, or create an environment for the art itself.
Mm-hmm.
It begins with little stuff like. We're having this concert, we're going to pay you that much, and you have your social securities there. Like, to create a safety net for artists to create, to have subsidies. Like, in Rotterdam, we had subsidies. We didn't get a loan to get an album done. You know?
Yeah.
And in Cyprus, it's very, very difficult to get this thing rolling.
You know, with subsidies, what you said, like the other night, I went to the Hambiz Printmaking Museum in the old town. It was a performance by Nicoleta Dimitriou. And again, I was blown away.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, I honestly say, you have some competition there.
No, she's my friend.
I mean, that in a total banter, fun way. That was incredible. And it was for free.
Yeah.
And I mean, from what I understood, that was funded by the arts department or something, the culture ministry over the country. But it was so good to see. And people are yearning for this. They're looking for something to do. Granted, we can all afford to pay 10, 20, 30 euros for a night out. But if the state comes along and puts this on for us, at the end of the day, we are paying for that as taxpayers.
Yeah.
You know, and some culture. I mean, I think we're all a little bit tired of the mundane and the usual stuff that the government punches out, you know, and a lot of it has to do around like ethniques jortes, the national holidays, and you know, ethnic patriotic moments. Like right now, as we're going to air, they're preparing for the 25th of March and the 1st of April. Now, this is where I wanted to go, because in our schools, Ken, I know from my three daughters that on the eve of the 25th of March and the 1st of April, and of course in October, that's when some culture is embedded in the school. So the kids learn how to march and bang a drum and maybe blow a trumpet or something. But it's all focused on the national cause.
Yeah.
What I would like to see, and tell me what your vision is, what I would like to see is a little bit more culture, whether it's music, theatre, the arts, you know, being embedded in the school, not necessarily and Eleonora Russo working full-time in the school. Well, I'm not even going to try and commit the government to that right now. I would like to see people like Eleonora Russo coming into the school and doing workshops with the kids.
I will do, actually, you know, with time. I'm usually invited to schools to give workshops with the kids, involving composition, improvisation,
beautiful,
basic rhythms.
In public schools?
Yeah.
Is this at the initiative of the teachers themselves? Yes. Okay.
Yeah. That's the thing.
Yeah.
And actually, everything is based on an initiative. Like creating a festival, creating a night out. You have a Check Out Cyprus and you see what's going on in music, in theater. But again, I feel that this is a sporadic array of events, you know? Like, there's no... when I was in Rotterdam, I would go into this theater on the website, and I would see, oh, these concerts are coming up, these shows, the theater shows, or this.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a more organized way to present what is going on. But now, like all music clubs and theaters, they have to send you SMS, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's no official... online, structure where you can go and see an overview of things. What's going on?
Because I don't think authorities have realized the economic value add and the cultural embedding of constant workshops and a proper structure. For example, the state should come along, and I keep using you as an example, but it could be any Eleonora
of course,
the island, to come in and say, right, every school is going to have one, two, or three artists come in on two, three occasions throughout the year at a minimum to get started. And they'll come in and do painting or animation or, you know, vocal singing or playing the piano or drama, okay? And come in and do these workshops, embed some, even mainstream culture into the children, okay? Because culture brings behavior.
Yes,
culture brings class and education and... It keeps the kids entertained. It inspires them to actually take up perhaps an instrument or an activity or an art. And they're less likely to be bored, which leads to juvenile delinquency. I mean, this has been proven all over the world.
Actually, I was going to say about music that it's one of the few activities that activate both hemispheres at the same time.
So, of the brain, you mean?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yes. So actually, what I advise my students to do is first practice their instrument for 15 to 20 minutes and then start reading for school, because they will have warmed up their brains.
Interesting.
To receive cognitively the structure of the information of the subject at hand.
Okay, so because I remember when I was studying psychology at university in Australia, they were saying to us that while you're studying for an exam, have music playing in the background.
Also.
So basically you're enacting both sides of the hemisphere. Okay, look.
When you play the instrument, though.
Yeah.
Because it's a passive activity. Mm-hmm. When you listen to music, the brain is still active because it's following the structure.
Okay.
But when you are doing it.
Yeah.
So the kinetic muscle, the kinetic kinesthetic memory, actually.
Wow, yeah.
It actually opens up both hemispheres.
Okay.
And it creates new neural pathways all
that
the
makes,
time.
That makes absolutely perfect sense. And again, coming back to that point I made earlier about enhancement of education and propelling students forward, I mean, they're going to perform better on tests. They're going to remember things better. They're going to be more innovative, more groundbreaking in their thought patterns.
Look at the Mozart effect, which has been studied on people like listening
he's
to
the guy
Mozart.
He's the guy that created those balls in Austria, right? The little chocolate marzipan balls.
Yes, with the marzipan.
Yeah, that guy. Got you.
That's the guy who created them.
Yeah, the chocolate guy, sure. He was a musician as well, apparently.
Austria. Yep. So the Mozart effect, I mean, they used it in studies where they had like a control group and a few other classes before taking a math test.
Okay.
So the control group would listen to Mozart music in a controlled environment, of course.
Yeah.
And for some time, I don't really remember all the details of the study. But the result was that there was a 20 to 25% better
that's a huge
achievement thing. Score, compared to the other classes who were, the students were like, okay, five students A, five students of B, and like the ratio of achievement in the in each class was the same. So imagine what would happen if children were actually the music players. It's a nerdy thing, music.
No, but it doesn't sound like rocket science either. This sounds like 101.
Yes.
I mean, I would like to think that our authorities in the education ministry and the culture ministry would be aware of this. One would hope.
That's push the for thing. It. Okay, I take it from my father, who was an educator mm-hmm. a few years back. So
and his quite a well-liked was... one, from what I might add.
Yes, yes. So he was teaching his students to play the mandolin, mm-hmm. the recorder. You would have two voice choirs at least, or three voice or four voice choirs, mm-hmm. which requires a skill. So music was highly regarded in early education, but nowadays it's not. And I think one of the reasons is because it's not an easy subject. Mm-hmm. It's a language. It's like math.
Would you say it's also because people think that to be a good musician, you need to have it in your DNA?
No, I think it's... I wish it were like that. Yeah. But no, I think they just disregard it.
Could you be an absolute tone deaf, clueless on how to play, like me? I'm 45 years old, nearly 46. I can't sing to save my life. I can't play music. But could I learn and be classified as a musician? Do you think if I put in the hard work, I could reach the Eleonora Russo level? Is this possible?
There's no Eleonora Russo level, because there are lots of levels above Eleonora Russo. But what I was trying to say is that the skills that you have within you mm-hmm. can be enhanced by learning a music instrument. Mm-hmm. Like you could be an adult beginner.
Because I think I could be our global leader in the triangle.
Actually, the triangle is a very, very difficult instrument in samba.
Don't ruin that for me. Come on, I had
dreams. Yeah, the percussionists are dreading it.
Really? Okay, no, so I had dreams. Eleonora ruined them for me.
Oh my God.
You heard it live.
I've ruined his... I am the subject quiz.
I'll always remember. I had a career in the triangle and you popped and that bubble.
But I think it's never too late to take a skill, like to try and build a skill, develop a skill. And I think as adults, we should try to engage mm-hmm. wholeheartedly in one of the arts.
Okay.
Be it music, be it dance, but really go into it.
I think also an art that people could get into that doesn't... Like if you're a bad singer, you know, it's hard to listen to it as an audience, okay? If you're singing tone deaf. But with art, as in on the canvas,
mm-hmm.
I mean, come on, we've all been to contemporary art museums and we've seen some things where we've stood in front and gone, my child could draw that, you know?
Yeah.
And I've thought so many times, like, I mean, I had this... situation with my wife, I don't know. We were in Paris and we were at the Georges Pompidou Center and it was the modern arts section, and we were walking through and I got so heavily offended by a few art pieces where I sat there and she was trying to defend it and she was right. I mean, I'll be honest, she was right. She's going, it's all in the eye of the whole, what is it? Art is in the eye of the beholder, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, you know, and you've got to see it for what the message they're trying to get across. I'm like, it is literally like he got a bucket and threw it on the canvas. You know, how is this art? You know, I was getting upset. And I thought to myself,
yeah, but it's an expression. It's a form of expression. That's the thing. Yeah. It's the process behind it.
Yes.
Not only the end product, but the process of going into the art, into the production of something that will elicit an emotion.
Yes, and this emotion it elicited was offense.
Be it
offense. But I mean, look, and look at the space for that. And I think it's important that we need to have the splash art.
who was it that said art should disturb the comforted and comfort the disturbed?
Yes,
I think that's a very wise thing mm-hmm. to say. Yeah. But like going back into evolving as an adult and incorporating arts, like, okay, we are adults, we go to work, and then we try to go and work out.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, adding to that,
okay,
you do something for the body, for the movement, do mm-hmm. something for the soul or for the brain. Do a bit of art, ceramic, whatever. Going to music, like have a holistic...
And it's never too late.
No, it's
like,
not.
I mean, I'll tell you this.
Just for the evolvement, for the, yeah. Your cognitive evolvement, at least.
Anna's great auntie, mm-hmm. who's still with us at 101 or 102 years old. Yeah, she's a beautiful lady. She started painting at the age, I think, of 92.
Wow.
92.
Yes.
And good. About 10 years ago, she had her first exhibition.
Wow.
And we went, and I mean, the fact that she was actually good. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, and it was so beautiful. And I sat there and I thought to my, at the time I was in my mid-30s. And I thought, I'm in my mid-30s. I have 60 years ahead of me.
Yeah.
And here she is at 92 starting to paint and did an exhibition.
So you see, you answered your own question.
Yeah, I did, didn't I?
You did? Yeah.
So my concert, Khara 2, will be in a year from now.
Khara, under the lens of gratitude, under the lens of joy of learning new things.
Well, what's the opposite of Khara? Misery, right? Like I could do a concert called Misery and be offending people.
It could be, no, lack of gratitude.
Yeah, okay. Maybe I could do that.
Misery is... Misery, I can get up
and offend the audience, and I'll just say it's art.
It could be disturbed art.
Disturbed art.
Yeah, but it's a form of expression, and that's what I wanted to say, that mm-hmm. as adults we have come to give logic to things mm-hmm. and swallow our emotions, mm-hmm. and especially men are a bit prohibited, let's say, by societal rules, and. If you think of a man who would act out and get angry or be offensive or whatever, if that man had a pinello, like a brush uh-huh. in his hands twice a week.
Or woman.
Of course or woman. Yeah. I'm just saying.
No.
Sorry, I didn't mean to. But if that person had a brush in their hands twice a week, they would think twice because they would express part of the unexpressed. Yep. They would express it in a form, in a written form, in a visual form. Mm-hmm. They would have expressed it in a way.
That's a good point. Tell me, have you performed at Guglia?
No.
Okay, so I want to add to your bucket list. And if Garo, Garo is listening from the Faros Trust, they do a great musical event series at Guglia once a year and at the Olive Grove. But I would love to see you perform in Guglia because that venue would match your voice perfectly.
Okay.
Or the Bella Baise Auditorium.
Oh my God, Bella Baise. Oh my God.
Like, I mean, I would love to see you.
It's my favorite place on earth.
Yeah?
The energy of that place is unmatched.
It's a beautiful medieval abbey built on the side of Pentadactylos. Overlooking the Mediterranean Sea, the sandstone, the greenery of the
smell
cypress trees.
Of nature,
auditorium, the hall, the great hall, which was once the room that the monks would have their lunch and dinners in, but now it's this beautiful music venue. I would love to see.
I would also love to perform at Bella Baise.
Yes.
I haven't been to the Guglia site, but I would be very interested.
Guglia, there's a similar building to the Abbey, Bella Baise Abbey. It's a smaller one, but it's just as beautiful. And I think that your voice would match there. Your presence would be wonderful there.
Well, thank you so much.
Let's make this happen. Anyone listening, hint, hint.
Thank you.
Look, Eleonora, just a last couple of questions.
Yeah.
Where in Cyprus is your family from?
Oh, my mother is from Linou Flassou.
Linou
Flassou. Which is next to Katidada, yes.
It's like one of the bread baskets of the island.
Yes, I think. And my father is from Agios Ioannis Lefkosias. It used to be called Agios Ioannis Malundas, but now it's been renamed to Lefkosias, and my dad insists on that, and he corrects me every time, Agios Ioannis Lefkosias, Eleonora.
Why did it change?
I don't know. I think because they used to call it Malundas because it's
next to Malunda,
the village. And now because it has its own gymnasium and it's growing, I guess it's Lefkosias because it's closer to Lefkosia.
And plus it's in the district of Lefkosia versus the ones that are in
Agros.
There's
Agios Ioannis Agrou, which is in Limassol district.
Which is actually where Vagoras Mavromatis, the later musician is. The chef is from, I think. Yeah, that's why I know this village just recently.
Lefkosia, they're both villages of Lefkosia, so I'm from Lefkosia.
No, Ayosiwan is, it's actually a beautiful village. I don't know if you've been, but there's this wonderful little water mill to make flour, which is, it needs to be restored, and I'd love to see that happen.
Hint, hint again,
because that is such a great potential tourist attraction. It's in a great field.
It's by the river.
Yeah, I mean... Well, the river that it has water twice a year, but
but it does.
Yes,
it does. Now actually, it's full of frogs.
Because of the water.
It's full of flowers. It's a lovely village. Actually, there are a lot of lovely villages across that road.
There are, and they're underrated.
Palechori, Askas. Leading to Agros Kliru, also Kalochorio.
No, there's a beautiful... And I mean, a lot of people know Figardo, which is just nearby.
Yes, Figardo, Agrokipia also, that has an amazing monastery.
Yes.
Women's monastery. We have a lot of lovely spots.
I took my grandmother there last year.
Yeah.
I used to have Klithios, if I'm not mistaken, right?
No. Agios Panteleimon.
Oh, sorry, yes, you're right.
Another women's monastery.
No, you're right. Agios Heraklidios is in Tamassos area.
Yes, closer to Tamassos. But it's okay.
I took her to both of those monasteries that day. That's why I got them confused.
I want a Cyprus tour by you, eh?
Yes, anytime. I've been saying this for a long time. A lot of people ask me, I've got to put a minibus together and
please.
Do a tour.
Actually, I'd like to do a Varosi tour. I would do it with you because it would be a very emotional experience. I would want to do it with a person I trust.
Thank you. You're on. Let's do it before it gets too hot. Okay, Eleonora, thank you so much for coming in and recording with me today.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, you've been on my bucket list. I cannot tick you off.
Take
you off now, done.
A big shout out to Dipen Bandari, our friend.
Ah, yes.
From Fanus. And hello to Rami as well, because he'll be nagging for the next 3 months. Dipen, not Rami. He'll be nagging me that, you didn't mention me at the podcast.
Dipen, originally from Nepal, now a Cypriot, has voting rights. Hint, hint.
We love you, Dipen.
He makes the best tea. So if you ever go to Fanus Lebanese in the old town in Lagi Yedonia, Nicosia, ask for Dipen's tea. It is to die for. There's two types. There's the black tea and there's the ginger tea.
Oh, my.
They are spectacular.
They're Eleonora's tea. So ginger tea is Eleonora's tea now.
You can find Eleonora every second night Fanus Lebanese. Rami Mo,
we adore you. Fanus Lebanese, please check it out. It's an amazing spot. We love it. We love the owners. It's like a second home to us.
It is. Maybe we should get you to sing there one night.
Yeah.
Okay. Eleonora, ευχαριστώ. Thank you so much.
Thank you too.
Look forward to hearing this live on the... Oh, well, not live. On air soon.
On air, yes. Thank you so much.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus. Island Talks. Open. Diverse. Free.